And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 55 of the Fanboy Garage. We are happy to be here. Lots to unpack today. An amazing weekend full of lots of fanboy stuff that I'm sure people have been chomping at the bit for. So let's kick it off, but let's start with the box office, right?
Yeah, we'll start with the box office because there's way too much other stuff to get into. I can't even figure out what things I'm more excited about. It changes by the minute. But yeah, so exciting things happened in the box office this week. As expected, The Lion King was number one. Now, the original projections had it around $200 million, and the initial estimate from... like for the weekend was $185 million, but it actually overperformed on Sunday. So the final number was $191.7 million, or really
$0.8 million.
No, it's pretty decent. And it's already at like $560 million, I think, worldwide. $565 million worldwide. So a huge opening weekend. Broke all kinds of records for biggest July openings and biggest... non-Marvel Disney openings, and I saw one place that was like, well, if you consider this an animated film, which you could almost consider it, considering for it's sure. all CGI, it's the biggest animated opening ever. So like it broke all kinds of records, and clearly it's on its way to $1 billion, right?
Yeah.
If it's 560 in the first week. I mean, unless this thing takes a huge tumble. Now, it did get an A cinema score, and it's got like an 89% user score on Rotten Tomatoes. So the word of mouth has been strong, clearly showing what we talked about last week, that audiences just look at these things differently than critics, right?
Right.
Because it's about 55%, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes, which is like kind of a take it or leave it type of thing.
Right.
But, audiences, especially little kids, they're going to go into this thing not really caring that it's just like the original. Maybe they haven't even seen the original.
So I had the distinct pleasure of watching half of the film.
Half of the movie.
Half of the movie. So as of this recording, my daughter will be turning 3 on Wednesday, the 24th. And I'm recording on Tuesday. And we thought it'd be a good idea to take her. She couldn't sit through the whole thing, so we had to leave midway. But I will tell you, it is a beautiful film. Jon Favreau definitely brings the heat. A lot of the things he's learned in The Jungle Book, certainly present in The Lion King. Characters are compelling. The songs are absolutely the same. And there's it is really a beat for beat rehash of the story, from the animated film. But I'll tell you, it was compelling. It was a good movie to watch, at least the parts that I've seen. And
so you recommend that everyone go see at least the first half of
for sure the film? For sure. I mean, it's good. It's really good. I mean, James Earl Jones is voicing Mufasa again, and I'll tell you, the one thing that absolutely bothered me about Rogue One, for all of its good stuff, was you can hear the aging of James Earl Jones in his voice, and that's not so present in The Lion King. It very much sounds like Mufasa, who just sounds like James Earl Jones. But I don't know if he had a cold when he was doing his voiceovers for Darth Vader in Rogue One, but he is in good form. And I think Scar is a great character, and Zazu is awesome. So I would definitely recommend folks go see it if you just want to see being able to call out what's real, what's not. I have no idea if the whole thing is absolutely fake because it looks that good, the CGI.
Right.
I don't know if there were scenes that were actually filmed like documentary style, like, nature shots that were, included in the film, because the animal movement, a lot of that stuff looks amazing. So I would say go check it out.
All right.
And no surprise that it's making bank.
Sure. Spider-Man Far From Home was second. It had a 53% drop. It did $21.2 million. So it's closing in. Well, it's going to be already over $320 million domestic. So it's by the end of this week or in this coming weekend, it'll already have surpassed the domestic gross of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right.
And it's at $975 million worldwide, which means by the end of this coming weekend, it will also be at $1 billion.
For sure.
So, obviously, you know, huge success there. No surprise. Toy Story 4, another really strong hold. So, to me, this was the interesting story of the weekend, besides just the ridiculous numbers that The Lion King did. Toy Story 4 was number 3. It only had a 25.8% drop. It did $15.5 million. That's pretty good considering the fact that you have to assume that The Lion King was going to cut into a significant portion of that audience. So not a bad hold there. That movie is, you know, well over. It's like at $865 million almost worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice haul for that. And Aladdin, which is the other story of the week.
Oh, my God, Aladdin.
Aladdin only a 33.8% drop. It did another $4 million and change. That movie right now is at $89.6 million as we record this, which means it too will be over $1 billion before, you know, the end of its run. Just crazy.
That's
because that is literally the same audience, right, as The Lion King. I mean, you have to assume that. And the movie, the thing lost 452 theaters, and Toy Story lost 460 theaters. So that's incredible to me.
It, you know, 2019 is certainly becoming the year for Disney films, like hands down.
Well, I mean, you have Avengers Endgame, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
You had Captain Marvel, which did $1.2 billion, right? Endgame, we all know what that did. And you have The Lion King now, which is going to do $1 billion, you have to assume. And Aladdin, which is going to do $1 billion. And Toy Story, which is going to be, you know, $865 plus million. I mean, yeah, not bad.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy year. Crazy, crazy.
And then they have still have The Rise of Skywalker. Coming at the end of the year. So,
very, very
and true. And had Spider-Man Home Far From Home actually been a Disney thing, which it isn't, it's a Sony thing, then it would have been even crazier. But Far From Home doesn't go on the Disney docket.
Right.
It goes on the Sony docket, even though it's a Marvel Studios production. So, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, let's get into the other big story box office this weekend. Avengers Endgame is now the number one all-time box office champion. It did pass Avatar this weekend, and, you know, it's at $2.791 billion and counting, so basically $2.8 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, golf claps all around.
Sure.
I think the really cool thing about this story is how James Cameron celebrated the success of the film. And it's, you know, milestone. And there was equal respect shown by the Russo brothers.
Sure.
Who, you know, praised Cameron and his movie and filmmaking prowess and his, you know, sort of cutting his ability to, you know, create movies with cutting edge technology. So it's a great thing. You know, I saw a lot of memes flying around on Twitter with folks saying, oh, the studio that was acquired by Disney beat another studio that was acquired by Disney. So it's like Disney sort of, competing with itself. But, that's certainly a milestone. It's big, and we'll see what the next film is that beats it.
Just an I mean, I guess something ultimately will, right? But you... Just to put this into a little context for the people who are saying, like, well, they had to do the re-release just to break the record. Here's a stat. Avatar, which did receive a re-release as well, was in theaters for 34 weeks. Avengers Endgame, with its re-release, has been in theaters for 12 weeks.
That's ridiculous.
So there's a stat that just maybe will apply a little context for people who, you know, believe that, and granted, look, we know why they did the re-release, right? It had nothing to do with Spider-Man Far From Home. It was about getting this record, and that's fine. But just that, when I looked that up and I saw that, because I just said, let me just out of curiosity, let me see how long Avatar was in theaters versus Endgame. Because I'm big on context, you know that. and when I saw that, I was like, wow. Like, I didn't think it was going to be like that.
Right.
So, I mean, Avatar opened in like this towards the end of the year, and it was still in theaters in like the following August. Now, granted, it was doing like $100,000 like for a weekend, but still, 34 weeks to 12 weeks is that's a big difference. And so, you know what? Endgame is a monster. We all know it. It's now the number one movie of all time. And now we'll wait to see, like you said, what the next movie is going to be that hopefully breaks that record or challenges it.
But Chris, what about inflation?
Well, but Avatar didn't come out 20 years ago. So, like, when we talk about adjusting for inflation, like, people who were trying to compare, say, like, the opening of Shazam to the opening of, like, Batman Begins.
Right,
well, that's
right.
Different because there was a lot of things that were different. First of all, international markets weren't what they were then. And inflation, obviously, is a thing there. But Avatar, I mean, did enormous international numbers.
Right.
So I think Avatar, you know, and Endgame are a fair comparison. And again, the disparity in weeks, you know, I mean, you're talking about a 10-year difference. So, yeah, there's going to be some inflation in there. But Avatar was a huge 3D extravaganza. It was a huge IMAX extravaganza. So it did, you know, reap the rewards of inflated ticket prices, you know, as Endgame probably did as well to a point. Although I would be surprised if. I would assume Avatar's 3D numbers were a higher percentage of its overall ticket sales. But again, it's because of the international markets, which I think is a bigger deal. That's why I think it's a pretty fair comparison. But again, we're talking about Avatar having been in theaters three times longer.
Too. Right.
So that's where you take your inflation argument and throw it out the window. But either way, look, I mean, both movies were massive juggernauts, and I'm not one of these people that cares, other than the fact that, as I mentioned last week, I was annoyed that Titanic beat Star Wars at the time. I got over all of that stuff, and none of this stuff really matters to me that much as far as record holders, because at the end of the day, it's good for the box office, it's good for the movies, and that's why people like James Cameron and the Russo brothers are going to celebrate these things because it's good for everybody, right?
Yeah. No, it's awesome. Yeah. So we'll see. Maybe Rise of Skywalker.
That'd be great, right? But I don't think.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But all right. Well. So if we're done with box office, let's move into a little thing that just happened over the weekend called San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, so you might have heard that Marvel made some announcements at San Diego Comic-Con. You know, it was interesting. We're going to get into a lot of things. I mean, to me, the Marvel Hall H thing was about the stuff that they announced and the stuff that they didn't announce.
Yeah.
Right? And the stuff that they just kind of mentioned, because I think there was a lot to talk about here with this. So let's talk about what they did announce first, right? So they announced what they're saying is their official slate for Phase 4, which is going to span the next couple of years over both the movie, the actual theatrical releases, as well as the Disney Plus streaming shows. It's all going to be Phase 4. And then beginning in 2022, you'll get Phase 5, right?
Right.
So what they did announce, and we'll go through it in the order that they made the announcements, the Eternals... Right?
Yeah.
Which is going to be released November 6, 2020. That was the first thing that they announced. And then they announced The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is going to be on Disney Plus in the fall of 2020. Obviously starring Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan as the aforementioned characters, right? And also Daniel Brühl will be returning, right, as Baron Zemo.
That's right.
Yeah. So the next thing now was Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. So this is a movie that, you know, we've known, right, was coming out. A lot of the stuff that they actually announced was stuff that we kind of knew about, but they added a little bit more context to a lot of it, this being one of them. So I'm not going to say that this movie was necessarily huge on my radar when they first announced it, but now it is. And I'll tell you what.
You know, I was going to say, you know, it's funny. It's like the same thing for me. I was like, I've never read a Shang-Chi comic book. No, me knew nothing of the character. As soon as they dropped that title, Yes. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, yes. Like, my ears were like, what? What's right. going on here?
Because we obviously know that the Ten Rings have played a role, right, in mm-hmm. the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And we all know that, obviously, what happened in Iron Man 3, right, with the fake Mandarin that everybody right. hated. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people hated. And then they did the short where they announced that or revealed that there was, in fact, a real Mandarin. And he mm-hmm. was not happy, right, about the events of the imposter Mandarin from Iron Man 3. Right. So now we're going to really, I guess, get to dig into the Ten Rings and what they are. Yeah. And also...
And the Mandarin is the villain.
Yes. And by the way, that's what has me really excited.
Yeah.
Tony Leung is playing the real Mandarin in this. So I've talked before about my love of John Woo and his... classic Hong Kong action films. Tony Leung was in Hard Boiled, okay, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And aside from the
which I'm sure we've mentioned like 15 times on the yes. course of this show.
Yes. And aside from the John Woo stuff, he was in Infernal Affairs, which is a classic movie that inspired The Departed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he was in Jet Li's Hero. So, I mean, this is a guy that this is a great actor. That they have playing the Mandarin. So I'm very, very excited. I was very excited to see that name. Very excited to see that he's playing the Mandarin. I'm not going to say that I know a lot about Simu Liu, who is playing Shang-Chi.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, martial arts, Marvel, superheroes, Tony Leung, the Mandarin, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you, man. This one in particular, I'm very, very excited about, and yeah. I'm looking forward to have it. I mean, I'm going to have to do some research
sure.
about Shang-Chi and know exactly what it is that he does.
Assuming you have to look up Master of Kung Fu, right? Because that's really what he was.
Right. And you know what's funny? Oh, so the fact that you just said that, I do have like one Master of Kung Fu comic book. It's like an old one stashed away somewhere, and I've not read it ever. So I'm going to have to find that.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Read that.
And I'm hoping that it's a little different. I'm hoping that because of like the martial art element, not that there hasn't been martial arts in the fight choreography mm-hmm. before, but like this is like an actual martial art character.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that it adds something a little different vibe sure. to these things.
Sure. Yeah. Now, do you think they might pull elements of what we've already seen in, like, Doctor Strange and some of that? Or do you think they're just going to go totally original with it to a total different style?
I don't know. That's what I'm yeah. saying. Like, I don't know yet. I guess we'll find out.
But we'll
I'm
find hoping, out sooner than later.
Yeah. And again, like you, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know a lot about this character because yeah. I don't. But I, too, will... start reading up a little bit more because I'm pumped kind of about this now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I'm kind of stepping back a little bit. I know. So we mentioned the Eternals. They did highlight the full cast was there.
Yep.
Very exciting. And I think this is where we're going to start seeing more of a flex a little bit of their muscles and going fully cosmic. So really excited about that.
Yep.
You mentioned about Baron Zemo coming back and apparently he'll be wearing his purple mask.
Okay.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a dude wearing a sock mask is, like, amazing.
Sure.
So, I'm excited about all this stuff.
Yeah, okay, and the Captain America shield features very prominently in the logo art for Falcon and Winter Soldier, so.
It does. And as a matter of fact, Anthony Mackie, yes. when taking the stage at San Diego Comic-Con,
yes.
was rocking the Captain America
yes,
shield.
Yes, he was.
Because he is officially Captain America, right? Like,
He's obviously not officially Captain America if the name of the show is The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
True.
So he's clearly the Falcon. But I would assume that one of the bases for the show will be his evolution into Captain America, especially since it ties into the movies. So I would think that's a thing, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing, too, and I know we'll get into this a little bit as we kind of go through the rest of the projects that were announced, but they didn't really set a timeline, or at least I didn't really read much about the timeline in which this is taking place, where some of the other projects, they've been very deliberate to say when exactly these things are taking place. So We don't know if this is happening. I mean, it has to happen after Endgame.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I think they've pretty much
did they say that? Because I didn't catch that one.
And the next title that they released, I think, gives you a hint about that, because the next thing was WandaVision.
Yes.
Okay, which is the original series.
So weird to me that that's the name of the freaking
I agree.
Show.
It's weird. Elizabeth Olsen.
Like WandaVision?
Yeah, Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany back as Scarlet Witch and Vision. And that's going to be in the spring of 2021. And, you know, that movie is now we're going to kind of jump a little bit, but that movie is supposed to directly tie into the Doctor Strange movie, which we'll talk about in a second. So that's
right. This is a Disney Plus.
Yes.
Yeah. Project.
Yeah. So I would assume so. Falcon and Winter Soldier will come up after Endgame. Clearly, you know, WandaVision is going to be whatever it is, but it is going to tie into the Doctor Strange movie. So, yeah, these movies they're going to connect with these streaming shows, because that's why they're all part of Phase 4. They're not just like standalone little things that have nothing to do with anything.
This is, to me, probably the most exciting bit of everything that was announced at Hall H, is watching Marvel and Disney take like true advantage of the streaming service and stitching their narratives together, not only just on the big screen, but through Disney Plus. And that's super exciting to me.
Yep.
You know, when I was reading about WandaVision and, you know, sort of the timeline in which it takes place, but also the fact that it will tie into the Doctor Strange sequel.
Yep.
And that Wanda will actually be a part of that sequel as well is super exciting. But the other piece of that is they cast a character who we've met and seen before, but she's the grown woman. And that is Monica Rambeau, who we met in Captain Marvel. So she'll be a part of that show, which is really cool.
The next thing, though, was Loki. Which is going to be the Loki series, obviously starring Tom Hiddleston. And that's going to be in the spring of 2021 on Disney Plus. And the way they described it originally was that it was going to be almost like a sort of an evil quantum leap. It takes place right after he basically disappears in Endgame.
Right.
And I guess we're supposed to assume now he's jumping through time, sort of disrupting a lot of things. And that's perfect.
Right.
That works. So, and as we just mentioned, the next thing they announced was Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. I love that title.
That's wild.
Yes.
That's the other thing. A lot of their titles, super comic booky.
Yes.
Like ballsy.
Yes.
Like really ballsy.
Yes.
Because I don't think ever in a million years would I would have expected a Doctor Strange movie being titled like that, or the Thor movie, which we'll get to.
Well, yeah, we got a whole lot of stuff about that. But, yeah, so obviously Benedict Cumberbatch is back as Stephen Strange, Scott Derrickson returning as director, and as you just mentioned, Elizabeth Olsen and her Scarlet Witch will also be in this movie, which sounds amazing, right? Because those two characters really were really highlights, I thought, of the last two Avengers movies. As far as like their action pieces and whatnot, and I liked Doctor Strange, and I'm a Benedict Cumberbatch fan, but I do admit that he was much cooler in Infinity War than he was in his own movie, and I thought that Scarlet Witch was really cool in these movies, so it'll be good to see those two characters together, hopefully shining.
Yeah, I'm stoked about it. The other piece of this that I'm really excited for is the fact that they're throwing around the word multiverse.
Yeah.
Which we did get a taste of in Spider-Man Far From Home, spoiler alert. And apparently in the story it was made up, but it sounds like it's a very real thing. It's something that's going to be explored. Obviously, going back to WandaVision, we don't know how Vision comes back. Is it Shuri from Wakanda that brings it back? Is there some time foil? We don't necessarily know. So all of that will, I'm sure, be explained. But yes. It looks like we're getting some really, really cool stuff.
Sure. And that movie comes out May 7th, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's something that if you're like an old school comic book geek, you had to have freaked out over, right?
Dude, this is so cool.
What If is going to be an animated show on Disney Plus in the summer of 2021 with Jeffrey Wright as the voice of the Watcher, and it's going to incorporate a lot of actors from the actual MCU reprising their roles as voice talent. So if you're not familiar with What If, it was a comic book series that basically it gave like an alternate reality, right, of the Marvel Universe. So like, what if this had happened? Or what if this hadn't happened? Like things like that.
Right.
That just sounds all kinds of amazing.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeffrey Wright, voice of the Watcher, sure. this is amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And the next thing was Hawkeye, which will also be a Disney Plus streaming show in the fall of 2021. Obviously, starring Jeremy Renner. And it's also going to introduce Kate Bishop, who he will be mentoring in this show, which I guess is a big part of the show. So we'll get to see a little bit more of that. And obviously, that's going to tie in.
That's fun. It's like basically how a non-superhero trains another non-superhero. So cool. Bring it on.
And it's a good concept, I think, for like a streaming show versus a movie.
For sure.
Yeah. So it's a good use of that. Now, here we go. So,
wait, are you getting into Phase 5?
No, because we still have to do Thor.
That's right.
November 5th, 2021. We talked about the Thor movie last week, right? The announcement that Taika Waititi was going to be back writing and directing it. Well, now we have a title, Thor: Love and Thunder, and we have the most amazing logo. I am in love with this logo. This logo is like so 80s. It's so like Beastmaster, Red Sonja.
Like, yeah.
Oh, God, I love everything.
It's like something
about
you throw
this.
On a t-shirt.
Oh,
like, right
man,
away.
I will be throwing this on a t-shirt of some kind. And apparently, so obviously Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson and Natalie Portman are back for this. And the key here is that despite the fact that it's called Thor: Love and Thunder, it's taking its inspiration from the Mighty Thor storyline where Natalie Portman's character, Jane Foster, will actually become the Mighty Thor, which was a very unpopular, by the way, and controversial storyline in the comics. I don't know many people that were actually a fan of that storyline, so it's interesting that they've decided to turn that, of all things, into a movie, but hopefully the movie works out better than the comic book storyline did.
I mean, you got Taika Waititi writing and directing it, so yes. I'm sure it's in good hands. I've got faith in him. It's going to be awesome. The fact that they were able to bring Natalie Portman back after she kind of dissed and dismissed Marvel like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah. Money talk, obviously.
Yeah. It's exciting.
And the fact that she's going to get a meaty role, you would assume, right?
Right. I know, 100%. So hopefully she chews into that and actually delivers, you know, something cool and she gets to be a superhero.
Yeah.
Like legit. So
pretty dope. Yeah. I'm not the biggest Natalie Portman fan. I just mainly because just the whole Star Wars prequel stuff left a bad taste in her. She was hideous in that.
Well, come on. Wait a second. The Professional?
No, I was going to say there are movies I've liked her in. Now, obviously, The Professional is a great movie, but that was a very young Natalie Portman.
Okay. Black Swan.
Yeah, I saw it.
Came after.
It's fine. It's not my cup of tea, but fine. Yeah. But again, I'm not saying I dislike her overall. She was so bad.
Yeah.
So bad in those Star Wars prequels that it always leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I just don't know that her is. I'm going to be interesting to see how her as Thor works out. Because I assumed that they were going to do something different with Thor at some point. I figured they might have Valkyrie do that at some point. But they're going this way. That's fine. I'm just going to be interesting to see where exactly they go with it. It doesn't necessarily mean that Natalie Portman's going to be the new Thor forever. It could just be for this one movie. But
yeah. And Mjolnir. I mean, that's gone. So is that part of the Loki thing?
Is that Loki
messing with the timeline?
We still have to get him away from the... Figure out how he gets away from the Guardians of the Galaxy, too. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But that logo...
A lot of things.
That logo was enough for me. I don't really care what else happens.
Chris, you're like, that's it. I'm going. That's it.
That logo
blew me away.
God, it's amazing. And then the final thing that they announced, which is ironically the next movie that's coming out, May 1st, 2020, is the Black Widow movie, which is going to be our next Marvel movie, which is it's going to be a long time before we get a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be this Black Widow movie, which is obviously you're going to get more info about Natasha Romanoff.
Mm-hmm.
David Harbour also in this.
Yeah, pretty dope.
Yeah, so...
I'm coming off of Stranger Things season three. So,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, I can't say that I'm super pumped for this movie.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not, I don't, I mean, I might get there, but I'm not, I'm not jumping for, like, there were much more exciting things.
Agreed.
Clearly that they have coming down the pipe. And maybe it's just the whole, like the fact that I just watched the character die.
Yeah.
So like, okay.
See, it goes back to the Obi-Wan Kenobi thing. You're like, well, who cares about your story? We know how it ends.
Maybe.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a little different, but because I just don't know how interesting her story is in and around that, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. You know? Bringing in the Taskmaster. I know nothing about this dude.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, bring in the Taskmaster. Taskmaster. Great.
Yeah.
Thumbs up. No idea. I got to read some more books. Okay. Or Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's probably the move.
Yeah.
And then there were the final things that were announced, right? So he did mention, Kevin Feige, that there would... Well, you know what? Let's not go there yet. Let's just talk about the thing that almost broke the internet, right?
Dude, amazing.
Because they actually did give us a logo. They didn't give us a release date. They didn't give us anything other than the fact that they will be making a Blade movie, and Mahershala Ali will be playing Blade, which is fantastic. It's a home
amazing
run, right,
casting.
It's
perfect.
Just to show you how exciting this was and how hyped this was, so Google searches, which is a much better indication of, much better indicator of hype and buzz than Twitter trending is.
Mm-hmm.
That Saturday night, the two most searched things on Google, which both did over 2 million searches, were the Manny Pacquiao-Keith Thurman fight and Mahershala Ali. So clearly this was an announcement that resonated with people. And a lot of it, you know, a lot of people were like, well, I guess this officially tells you everything you need to know about where those Marvel Netflix series fall within the MCU.
Yeah, no, because...
And Kevin Feige did address it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter.
No, exactly. Yeah. He said, well, they were sort of part of the same universe, but...
But were they, though? I mean, because... what's her name? Alfre Woodard, who played Black Mariah and Luke Cage, also played Miriam Sharp in Captain America Civil War. Miriam Sharp being the woman that goes up to Tony Stark and says, my son was killed. Like,
that
way on his conscience, and so, she was still Black Mariah.
Okay, give a shout out to Brent from Borderless Fans podcast, because he's been all over this for a while now. Basically flying the flag of, like, the Marvel Netflix shows are not the MCU, and brought up a really good point after this, and he was like, because somebody said, yeah, but they referenced, the Marvel Netflix shows referenced events in the MCU, and especially in the beginning, and he was like, yes, they did, but the MCU movies never addressed anything having to do with the Netflix shows. So it was a one-way street. So, I mean, just because the Marvel Netflix shows did it vaguely in some ways address those things, the fact that it was never mentioned in the actual MCU tells you that they never really were part of the MCU.
Right.
They were trying to be part of the same universe, but the universe is never connected.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, to me, that's a shame, but hey, we got treated to some really, really great content in the Netflix Marvel shows. But they're bringing Blade. So I'm like, all right, guys, so long. That's great that you're not connected anymore. And sorry for Daredevil. Does that mean now that John Bernthal gets to play Wolverine? Hopefully. That's my top pick right there. Sorry, Punisher. But this is amazing. And the one thing, I don't know, I haven't really seen many people talk about this yet. I mean, I'm sure it's out there spinning, but you've got Sony launching their Morbius character, who's being played by Jared Leto. Will this connect to Blade? Has Marvel and Sony struck another deal where one of their characters now gets to bounce back and forth.
Maybe. And let me just say, just for accuracy purposes, I said Brent's from the Borderless Fans podcast. Their hashtag is at Borderless Fans, but it's the Fans Without Borders podcast. So I just want to make sure I get that right since I gave them the shout out.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff. And then the other things he did announce at the end of the thing were that, as we know, because these were the things they didn't, quote unquote, announce, right? Where Black Panther 2, he announced that Black Panther 2, though, is in development, which we know, that Captain Marvel 2 is in development. And he also did say that Fantastic Four
It
will be a part of this, and the mutants will be part of this.
This is just amazing.
So the mutants, obviously, we assume being the X-Men. And we talked about this on Twitter a little bit, you know, the whole idea of like, well, he just said the mutants, he didn't say X-Men. And my whole thing was, well, he probably used that term because he can now.
Yeah.
You know, for people forget that Marvel could not use the term mutants because it was part of the X-Men deal. That's why they went the Inhumans route.
Right. And failed.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Epically. But,
yes, they did. So for him to throw that out there, he probably did it just to be cute and also because he can.
Yep, he owns it now. Yep. And the other thing is we also have to remember that the idea of mutants is bigger than the X-Men itself.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Right?
Well, like Spider-Man, for instance, he's a mutant. Always has been.
Technically, yeah, yep. I guess.
So, I mean, you don't – they can – do a build to what becomes the X-Men.
Right.
But the mutants existed before they were compiled into the X-Men. And there, like you said, there's the other, you know, there's the Hellfire Club.
And right, and the other factions.
X-Men. Yeah. Yep. So all exciting stuff, stuff that he didn't necessarily need to talk about. So the fact that he did tells you that he's serious about it. Because Feige's not the type of guy that just throws something out there. Like, he's not going to throw out, we're working on a Fantastic Four thing. And then, like, it never happens. Like, he clearly believes they're doing it, or he wouldn't have said it.
Yeah. And he gets, I mean, that's the thing. He gets to talk about it. So all of that stuff, I mean, everything that's come off his mouth before, off his tongue, in the past, when he was talking about how he'd be really excited to do a Doctor Strange movie, all these things have come to fruition. So it's just a matter of time, folks. You know, we just have to bide our time.
Yeah,
it'll happen.
Yep.
I'm sure this next phase is going to set a lot of that stuff up. And again, I mean, the other piece of this is they're going to be stitching all of those narratives across the Disney Plus, you know, streaming service and the movies. So there's just lots of things for us to chew on. And I'm just frankly quite excited for all of that.
I mean,
you
have to figure phase five probably runs 2022 and 2023, right? If it follows the same pattern as phase four. So if you're looking at, we already know Black Panther 2, Captain Marvel 2, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, right? Plus whatever.
Blade.
You know, they announced Blade as part of Phase 4, though.
They
didn't give a date. Well, they technically didn't. It was part of the Phase 4 announcement, but it's not right. So maybe Blade, right, because it's not coming out in 2020 or 2021.
No.
Right, and they said that's Phase 4. So, right, so Blade, and then any streaming shows that come about as part of Phase 5, and then obviously, you know, whatever else happens. I'm assuming maybe another Spider-Man movie, who knows, but and maybe that's where you get Fantastic Four, and maybe that's where you get some mutant stuff, and so really exciting stuff for Marvel as expected, but some exciting stuff. Now DC wasn't there, which we mentioned before, but there was some, I think, some interesting news though that did come out relating to DC. So they announced that Doom Patrol is going to be renewed for a second season, which is due next year in 2020.
Mm-hmm. But here's
the
that.
Yeah, here's the interesting part though, because we've been talking about like what happens with DC Universe once HBO Max becomes a thing, right?
Right.
So I think this nugget here that they announced will help us maybe read between the lines and be able to analyze this a little bit more, because I think it does speak volumes. So with Doom Patrol, all new episodes will debut simultaneously on DC Universe and the WarnerMedia streaming service HBO Max.
That's awesome.
Okay, and all 15 episodes of Doom Patrol Season 1 will also be available on HBO Max upon its launch.
Mm.
That's interesting for a number of reasons.
Mm. Go ahead.
Because I think the main reason is because clearly they are getting people. This is what I think a transition.
I was just about to say that.
Into HBO Max is going to be. They are going to get people used to and accustomed to watching this stuff on HBO Max, but they're still going to honor the fact that they do have existing subscribers to DC Universe, and they don't want to kind of screw them over and make them have to double dip. But I think it doesn't make a lot of sense to have content on a $7 a month streaming service and on a $17 or $16 a month streaming service if you know the people that are paying $7 are going to want to watch that content and might pay mm-hmm. the $16. There you go. So eventually, I think this is sort of a soft transition over, and eventually all of this stuff will eventually be on HBO Max, and there will be no more DC Universe, at least in its current form.
Yeah, that's something else, man. I think... boy, I think we're going to see this service fade out. They haven't really said anything about Titans.
They announced
soon.
Season 2 is going to premiere September 6th, but that's way before. I don't even know if HBO Max will be in beta by September 6th. It might, but probably, if anything, it'll just be in beta, so they're not going to do anything mm-hmm. at that point.
And nothing on Swamp Thing.
No, nothing on Swamp Thing.
But there's still a whole bunch of other, there's like the Harley Quinn animated thing that's going to come out on DC Universe. So, I mean, obviously HBO Max isn't ready to go yet when those things drop, but it'll be interesting to see how they make that transition. I think, I mean, it's inevitable, I think.
It seems like it. It seems like that's what they're building towards. That's, you know, probably a good thing for everybody because... Yeah. I'm excited for, I mean, I love DC Universe. I have it. I love a lot of the classic content on there as well, but I'll gladly put that subscription aside to pay $10 more a month for all that other content and give me all of that DC stuff as well. Yeah. It's good stuff. Speaking of DC stuff though, any thoughts on this Crisis on Infinite Earths? crossover with Brandon Routh announcing that he will be playing the Kingdom Come Superman.
My gosh, that is dope. I mean, look, I'm not a fan of Superman Returns. I like Brandon Routh.
Yes,
I like what he tried to do with Superman. I thought he for what he was given, he did fine.
Yes,
seeing him step back in the role has me like a 5-year-old in the candy store. I'm stoked to see how the suit looks, how he steps back into the role, how he's going to take a different approach to it. I know it's not going to be, at least it shouldn't be, you know, another impersonation rendition of a Christopher Reeve Superman. I hope this is his take.
Right. Especially if they're Superman. If they're doing Kingdom Come Superman, I would hope the suit is like the Alex Ross inspired
Yes.
Kingdom Come suit or a variation of it.
Yes.
Hopefully they gave him the little gray, like, hair wing things, whatever you
call it. Yeah.
That'd be nice. You know, to age him up, because he still looks 12.
He's got a little gray going, but he looks good.
Yeah, he got to grizzle him up a little bit.
Yeah.
That's a dark character, right? So that's a darker version of Superman. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'm pumped for that. I love what they do. I've fallen off with those shows significantly, partly because of time. But those, I always make time for those crossover things because
they're great.
They're like they're so comic book, and they're so. As a fan of those superheroes and of those storylines and those comics, I mean, it's such a treat that we exist in a world where that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
It's like watching the Avengers assemble, you know, the way they do on the MCU, like on TV. It's amazing. It's awesome. The writing is off the wall. Great.
And Burt Ward is going to play is going to be Robin in the Batwoman section of that thing, and Linda Carter is going to be portraying a version of Wonder Woman I saw, so it's like, what is happening right now?
This is
my childhood and my present all colliding like at the same time, and yeah, I'm beyond excited for that.
Yeah, that's just amazing to see. And, you know, we got our taste of it. I'm sorry that the actor's name is escaping me, that played The Flash in the 90s.
John Wesley Shipp.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's been an active member to some degree on the Flash TV show, popping in here and there. So he stepped in that costume in the crossover event.
Yeah.
So it's awesome to see that too. So it's great that they're bringing everyone back. Bring in Tom Welling somehow. Michael Rosenbaum, bring him in. And my heart is full. That's all I'm saying. They've already had Dean Cain pop up here and there, so maybe he gets to play another Superman or Bizarro or something like that.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. Dean Cain, I think, would have been able to portray a good Kingdom Come Superman. But I'll take Brandon Routh. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
Let him – I'm like you. I mean, I'm not a fan at all of Superman Returns. Just at all. But I never had an issue with him.
Kicking five-year-olds, bro.
Yeah. You know, as we mentioned, like, of all the – there were some wacky casting decisions in that movie, Lois Lane being the prime one. But Brandon Routh was by far not the problem with that movie.
No.
It'll be nice to see him get a little redemption maybe in the fans' eyes, because, you know, he probably deserved better.
Yeah. I mean, dude, look at what this universe, this DCCW universe has been able to do. Like, they bring in John Cryer to play Lex Luthor. You know what I mean? Like, all of these old, Helen, what's her name? Helen Slater?
Helen Slater. Yeah.
They brought her back.
Yeah, they've shown reverence for, like, the stuff that I grew up watching, obviously.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing, man. Yeah. And it's great. A lot of the
bad
kids
stuff.
Don't...
I mean, you know, John Cryer, Superman 4. Helen Slater, Supergirl. I mean, these are not, you know,
right?
Epics.
Yeah, yeah. Ease up on the Superman.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan and all that stuff, but yeah, I mean, these are not these are not cinematic epics. But there are something though that do hold a soft spot in a lot of people's hearts, and so it's nice to see that, you know, a little tribute being paid to that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, the funny thing too is in this past year's crossover event, they did go back to Smallville. They went back to the Kent Farm from Smallville. They played the music, so just so good, man. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely, definitely cool. Here's something though that I think you might think is cool. This was from Comic-Con, and I don't know if you did see this or not. Are you going to be getting the Black Series Boba Fett helmet?
You damn straight I am.
Did you see that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's going to be about $120.
That's nothing, bro. You know what I paid for a replica, New Hope replica of Vader's helmet?
Like
$700, bro. $100.
Did you tell your wife that?
No.
Okay. She doesn't listen to the
show frequently. So.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. So $700 for a, like, they used the same cast that was put on David Prowse's head for the Vader costume. I even have the, like, missing bolt, the discolored bolt on his face mask.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, so next year is the 40th anniversary of Empire Strikes Back. So this helmet's going to feature, it's wearable, obviously, and it also features light-up sections, articulated viewfinder attachment, which has a light-up rangefinder. So, I mean, this is all you right here. I threw you as soon as I saw it.
I'm in trouble, dude.
Yeah, you're... Yeah.
I'm in trouble.
First of all, speaking of trouble, did you see that they're releasing those Masters of the Universe?
Those
Legacy, or whatever they're calling them, Origins, whatever they're calling them.
Basically,
they're new modern versions of the Masters of the Universe figures that, like, I first bought as a kid.
And they're, like fully articulating.
But now fully articulated, yeah.
That's awesome.
Because the originals were not, obviously.
No. He-Man's hand was, like, in this permanent, like, high-five position, but you can, you know, his elbow and everything was, like, locked into place.
Yep.
Yeah,
but they
I've
look
got, amazing. I get like a whole bunch of those figures.
Oh man, yeah.
Still, yeah.
I have a lot of trouble with that stuff. I need to stay away from all of that. But
yeah. So at Comic-Con or at, right before, no, it's probably like the Thursday of Comic-Con. A whole bunch of trailers dropped. So let's get into some of that stuff.
Yeah,
because those were exciting. So let's start with the Top Gun Maverick trailer.
Yes.
Which for some reason, so I'm not like, I like Top Gun, but I'm not like the biggest fan of Top Gun. But this trailer like got me all types of excited. And yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
I think it's like the jets, like seeing jets do things again, that kind of whisked me right back into like the 80s. And I was like, sure. I remember when like jets were like amazingly cool.
Right.
And seeing them do some funky stuff. You know?
Yeah. I mean, jets and ninjas, right? That was the big thing.
Dude.
You know what? The trailer is, it's a good trailer.
There's nothing in it.
Right. For this movie. But I am not, I like you, I've seen Top Gun. I like it. It's not a movie I watch. I've probably seen it twice in my entire life.
Yeah.
I'm just not pumped for it. I'm not the audience for this movie. This doesn't grab me like in the nostalgia feels at all. Like, and so like, which is, I think what it's going to play on for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Cause it's just not, I'm not nostalgic for Top Gun.
Yeah.
And I've never been that guy that's like, well, I really would love to see the continuation of that story. I'm not, like, I'm good with it. So, nothing wrong with the trailer. It's fine, but I just, the movie itself is just not something that I really care much about.
Yeah, you know, I felt like that, and then I watched the trailer, and it kind of gave me goose bumps.
Oh boy.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay, we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
Okay, the other trailer that dropped on Thursday was the It Chapter 2 trailer,
which is creepy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we get our full cast.
Yep.
You know, I don't even know the actor's name. That I just call him the Old Spice guy. So he's playing Mike. But you've got I'm so
James
bad with
McAvoy,
the news today. Yes,
Bill
James
Hader,
McAvoy.
Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, and some other dude I don't know that playing Eddie, but. It looks creepy as hell. Like that scene in the House of Mirrors.
Yeah.
Where Pennywise is chasing that kid and his like face is pushed up against the glass. Like, yeah, it's some good stuff though. I'm really excited for it. And it looks like they're going to be able to hit another home run, hopefully, knock on wood, but that comes out soon. And then there was a whole bunch of, before we get into the TV stuff, did you catch any of the featurettes that were released? Okay, so they did one for Terminator Dark Fate.
Okay.
And they just commentary from Linda Hamilton, James Cameron, Tim Miller, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, talking about how they're upping the ante. This is they're wiping the slate clean and this everything we knew, right? So Rise of the Machines and Salvation and Genesis no longer exist. This is the story picks up right as after Terminator 2, or not, I don't want to say right after, but it's a continuation of that story.
Yeah, so it's doing like what they did with the most recent Halloween movie.
Right, which I wouldn't say was incredibly successful, but it is what it is.
Well, no, but as far as a concept, like they're ignoring everything that came after the first one, as if those things never happened. So you can still watch those movies, right? And they fit together, but if you just want to be able to watch like the first one and this one together, you can. So if you just want to watch Terminator 1 and 2 and then this one, if it's any good, you'll be able to do that and it will make sense, hopefully.
Yes. And in the biggest case of, excuse me, what? Say that again. Edward Furlong is coming back. Did you catch that?
I didn't. Where has he been?
I don't know. Crack House? I have no idea.
Wow.
Apparently he's coming back. It's John Connor.
Wow.
That completely slipped under the radar. So I've read a couple
reason,
stories
it
about it. So I'm like,
excited.
Is that actually, is that a thing? Is that real? But that's what I heard.
Because the funny thing is everything about Terminator 2 is great except Edward Furlong.
Yeah.
Like,
punk ass kid.
He's annoying in that movie, and his acting is not even particularly good. But he's stuck in this movie that's just fantastic, right? With these revolutionary special effects and great soundtrack and, you know, overall great acting, except for him. So it's really weird that, like, was anybody saying, wow, I can't wait to have Edward Furlong back as John Connor? Although, I guess if you are going to connect them, I guess it makes sense, right?
You can't unless he's been killed. But then I have no idea. I don't even know how they're going to do this. Having looked at what his face looks like today, I'm like, dude, really? Okay. Good luck. Let's see how that works. But I guess for consistency's sake.
That's what I mean. If you're going to go through the trouble of saying, well, this, forget everything else.
I mean, they could have said he's been held up in a bunker, like, you know, trying to keep his neck off the line. I don't know if that works.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I just saw a picture of him now. That's not, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Okay.
No. It's like the years have not been kind to you, sir.
No. Yeah, apparently not much has been kind to him. But hopefully it's a small part.
Yeah.
And it's not much, just to kind of tie things together. I mean, you know, again, if they are going to go with the idea that this is, you know, Terminator 1 and 2 are the only other things that matter, he is your John Connor.
Apparently.
So,
I mean, he was so young that they couldn't recast an older person.
I guess they could. And, you know, look, listen, they recreated young Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Was it Genesis, I guess, right?
Right.
So,
but, oh my God, how disrespectful would it be if they, like they aged Edward Furlong's younger face into a smoother, not junky looking person, and he's like, dude, what the hell's going on?
Like I said, I'm going to assume that it's probably a small role, since this is the first we're hearing of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
And based on the plot, it doesn't seem like
he's that important
in much anyway. Yeah. So it's probably just another one of those little, like, nostalgic,
like, towards the end,
to tie it in. Yeah.
You know, probably. Where he, like, gets ready to, you know, take on the Terminators and the war begins and whatever. That's fine. Okay. So let's move into the TV realm of things. Did you catch the Watchmen trailer?
I've seen the Watchmen trailer. You know, So I want to be excited for this, because I'm a fan of the Watchmen movie, of Zack Snyder's Watchmen. I think what he did with that movie was, so that was always a story that everyone said is unfilmable, right?
Yeah.
And I think what he did with it was a masterwork, in the sense that it's as faithful as it could be to the original story.
Yeah.
But he made one major change in the final act that I think was absolutely necessary.
100%
Because I don't know how that would have played out on the screen to modern audience. Like, it's, you know, like that whole, I think it was a
giant squid.
Yeah, giant. I don't know how that would have almost been like the spider at the end of It, like the original It miniseries.
Right.
I think it was a necessary change, and I think how he ended that movie was effective. So that's why I'm such a big fan of that movie. So I love the story. I mean, and Watchmen's one of my favorite books of all time. It's lost a little bit because of the context that gets lost, because it really is a product of its time and playing on, like, the Cold War paranoia that we had here in this country, you know, in the 80s, like Reagan-era America, which obviously it gets a little bit lost now if you're reading it. I mean, I grew up in that time, so I can still apply the context, but for someone new reading that, you probably, some of that gets lost. But it's still a classic story. But there's one big problem that I have with this, and that's Damon Lindelof, who is a complete hack. Damon Lindelof should just never be able to do anything ever again. He is an awful writer. I mean, he's the guy who's, you know, he's responsible for destroying Lost. He's responsible for destroying Prometheus. That's what just does not have me excited about this. Plus, the trailers have been weird.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
It's like a bunch of people in like yellow masks. And
yeah, I mean, they're changing it.
I mean, you
clearly
got the Ozymandias character played by Jeremy Irons.
Yeah, they're taking liberties clearly with the story, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I don't know. I'm not in love with. Like I said, I want to love this, and I hope it's great. I'm just not. I'm a little worried about what I know of this thing so far.
And this is obviously meant to take place after the events of the movie,
right?
I don't even want to say the movie because I don't know if they're gonna retcon the squid thing, right? Like obviously they should reference it, but it's kind of hard because what Zack Snyder did in the movie is visually so impactful, so stunning and brilliant, frankly. Like the Dr. Manhattan thing is amazing, the way he was able to do that. And Dr. Manhattan apparently will make an appearance in this show. So it's kind of like one of those things where I don't want to see a man painted blue. You know what I mean? Like I want to see what Zack Snyder did. And if they don't take those cues, I'm kind of like, well, this is just going to be a watered down version of an amazing film, in my opinion.
So,
it's like, what's the point of watching
here's
it?
Here's kind of the description right now. This was based on an Instagram post that Damon Lindelof put up while the show was in early production. It says that Watchmen will not be a direct adaptation of the original source material. Instead, it's going to be remixed, aiming to tell an entirely new story set in the world where the events of the original story took place. The series will also showcase different points of view, with the only characters from the original storyline on the series being Dr. Manhattan, Silk Spectre, Hooded Justice, and Ozymandias. I don't really know what to do with that. Like I said, I hope it's great. I'd love it to be great because it's a great universe, great characters. Hate Damon Lindelof. Like a lot of the cast, though. It's a great cast.
Yeah.
Regina King, Don Johnson, Tim Blake Nelson, Louis Gossett Jr., Jeremy Irons, as you mentioned, Francis Fisher. There's a lot of great people in this. Gene Smart. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, that comes out soon.
Yep.
So we'll be ready for that. Going back to the idea of featurettes. So my favorite thing of all time, The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance, dropped a featurette at Comic-Con, which gave us a little bit more footage from the show, which looks amazing. It's been signed off on by Lisa Henson, the daughter of Jim Henson. So I'm over the moon for this series, which will come out on August 30th. So I won't belabor our conversation here with more love spreading or unpacking of my love for The Dark Crystal, other than to say, if you like that kind of shit, please watch it. And we can talk about it.
And, of course, Mark Hamill has been all over this.
Yeah, dude.
He's loving this. He's promoting the heck out of it. So.
He popped up on the panel. At San Diego Comic-Con, and expressed his admiration for the fans, for making him who he is. You know, obviously he is an iconic actor, you know, known for playing iconic roles, both that of Luke Skywalker, obviously the Joker, and he has involvement in this, and he's been doing a lot of other things. So I'm excited for this. So We'll see. And hopefully, in August, after August, we'll start talking about that a little bit. If Chris, you're into that kind of thing, but you got to come over still, and we got to watch the first one.
Yes, that's going to happen.
Okay. Three other things before we get into one of the things that I'm sure is near and dear to your heart.
Yep.
But Westworld season 3 also dropped a trailer. Dude, you watch Westworld?
I watched the first season.
Okay.
I liked it. I have not watched the second season yet. I've heard some mixed things about it, but I still will eventually watch it.
I enjoyed it. I thought there were some really, really cool things done. But, Westworld season 3 brings us into the real world and really sets up a showdown between spoiler alert, between Bernard and Dolores. And they're, the timeline in which they're kind of showing some of the Westworld characters, like Maeve, is in like World War II Nazi Germany time era. So there'll be some interesting things there. Can't really get a good sense of what's happening, other than to know that there are now robots walking the real world. So we'll see how that unpacks and unfolds. But I'm cautiously optimistic for it. Aaron Paul is involved in it, so I think it'll be good.
Yeah,
we'll see. Okay, two more things. Here we go. Snowpiercer.
Yes.
Series on TBS.
Yes, it is.
Looks interesting.
Yes. So I'm a huge fan of the movie Snowpiercer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great film. If you haven't seen it, you should. Starring Chris Evans. Directed by Bong Joon-ho, who directed The Host. Maybe you've right. heard about that movie. It's a really great movie. It's kind of an under-the-radar film. I recommend it to... It's one of my most recommended films, only because very few people actually have seen it.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, and since people are now very familiar with Chris Evans, it's an easy thing to recommend to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot easier than, say, Train to Busan, which is another movie that I recommend to everybody. A Korean film, like a zombie, sort of like 28 Days Later type of deal. That is an amazing movie if you're into that type of thing. Anyway, I don't want to get off on that tangent. But this show has had a very troubled history. It's been like they've stopped and started like three times, I think. They lost their original show. The original showrunner, though, was actually, it was somebody big, wasn't it? I'm trying to think who was originally attached to this. Like,
do
I want to
do some
that,
research.
Yeah, I know. I want to say that it was, Scott Derrickson was supposed to direct the pilot. Now, I don't know if he still has. Maybe he did, but I don't think so. I think they scrapped all of that, but who knows? I don't know. But anyway, it's going to air on TBS. Now, it was originally supposed to be on TNT, but now it's going to be on TBS, I think, next year, right? Spring. But they have renewed it already for a second season, so that's encouraging.
Yeah.
So obviously they like whatever they're seeing now. So Scott Derrickson did direct, co-direct anyway, the first episode.
Yeah, and I think now it's the co-creator of Orphan Black who's been tapped to do the show.
Orphan Black, a fantastic show. So that's exciting. That's good news. And it is kind of a reboot of the movie. So I mean, it's a great premise. It's certainly one that you could see becoming a television show. It might have to be, really, though. The universe isn't that big, though. So
that's what I'm seeing. Yeah. There's like 6,000 people on a train.
Yeah.
And it's all about the climb to the front, right? And like a hostile takeover. I mean, based on the trailer, there are some scenes that are reminiscent to the movie. Like the whole thing about sticking someone's hand out in the cold and then chopping it off. I hope they bring back the cockroach jello stuff. I think that'll be cool. But Jennifer Connelly is in it.
Yes.
And a couple of other folks that Jennifer Connelly is like the bigger actress to me. But, I don't know if having seen the movie, which was, to me, perfect. I don't know if I'm like actually committed to a series where I have to stay tuned when I've already kind of know the deal. You know what I mean? So
yeah. So just to give the story, because we did kind of touch on it. So Graham Manson, who was the co-creator of Orphan Black, took over for Josh Friedman, who was pushed out over creative differences. Scott Derrickson was directing the first episode, and he actually quit because he said that Graham Manson's vision was radically different from Josh Friedman's, and he wasn't happy with that direction. So that's why, but I guess he directed enough of it to still warrant a credit. So that's what happened. So, you know, those were the things I had been hearing about, which were troubling to me, but maybe they've figured it out. I loved Orphan Black. So,
yeah,
again, I hope it's great. I'm going to say the same thing I said about Watchmen, because, again, this is Watchmen's a movie I love. Snowpiercer's a movie I love. So they can make great TV shows out of it.
I mean, have they done – I'm racking my brain right now for movies that have been converted into TV shows that were successful. Westworld is a great example, right?
I mean, happened. I mean, they did have that Transporter series, which wasn't particularly good. But, I mean, MASH would be the best example, right?
Okay.
Of a classic film that became a classic television show.
Yeah.
Private Benjamin became a television show that was pretty successful for a while. I mean, it's happened before,
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, but that wasn't really... I mean, that wasn't based on...
No, it wasn't like a straight movie.
Yeah, were character... Well, a character anyway. But hey, listen, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s got 7 seasons. So.
Oh, my God. Clearly, I can't believe they're giving it another run.
Well, one final season. I thought it had a great ending, and the end of season 5 was a fantastic ending for the show when they thought it was going to be the last season. I didn't bother watching season 6 because I was good with how season 5 ended. I choose to use that as my ending for the show. There have been shows that have been made based on very good movies that wound up being, mm-hmm. you know, good shows that lasted a while. So it's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Second to last topic, trailer dropped for The Witcher starring former Superman, Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
Did you catch that?
I have seen it.
I know nothing.
No.
I'm like Jon Snow.
Right.
Dude, know nothing. Don't know anything about the books.
Exactly. I'm with you.
Looks sort of cool. I mean, yeah. I like people swinging swords is always fun.
Sure.
Magic. Hey, cool.
Yep.
Will I watch it? I'm going to wait. We'll see what people say first before I jump on that bandwagon. But hey, Henry Cavill looks great.
Yeah, he does.
You know,
and it'll be good to see him in something because, you know, I'm a fan. So,
yeah.
He's got great presence about him. I mean, clearly that's undeniable. So,
yeah. And he was very, very excited about it. Was out, you know, doing the, media tour at San Diego Comic-Con. And, I'm sure it's going to be great. So, so we'll see. And for any fans or listeners who are big fans of The Witcher books and series, please get at us, educate us. Chris and I are apparently completely in the dark on this one.
Yes.
So share some things about why you enjoy it, and hopefully maybe that'll inspire us to definitely check it out when it drops. Okay, last thing, big thing, because it got me really excited. Chris, I can only imagine how you were feeling. Picard.
Yeah, Star Trek Picard. So needless to say, This just, my head exploded from this trailer. So, this trailer was just, I mean, this is everything I would have wanted this trailer to be. This is everything I'd want this show to be. Obviously, just seeing Sir Patrick Stewart in that role again was enough for me. I didn't need much else. But Data, 7 of 9, seeing these characters again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh man, the music.
The music was like spot on for me.
Yeah, I can't wait for Picard.
It seemed so cinematic.
Yes, that too. Well, so was Star Trek Discovery. So that's the thing. I mean, the one thing about CBS All Access and CBS, they have pumped money into these shows. Star Trek Discovery has a huge cinematic scope to it. So it's not surprising to me that this show would as well. But yeah, it's a beautiful looking trailer. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful looking show. So I can't say enough about this. I was talking to someone today, actually, who's also a big Star Trek fan, about this for about an hour, and it's just going back and forth about all of it. Is exciting stuff. This is, again, I will say this again, I keep saying this phrase, but this is the best of streaming services, right? These types of things that you're getting.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. they got Patrick Stewart to come back to play a character that he said he wouldn't play again for a streaming show.
Right.
That has this epic cinematic scope. I mean, that's tremendous.
I mean, you have to think the story has to be tight. You know, it's not one of those things where, I mean, he cherishes this character. So obviously for him to step back into the role, there had to have been something that really excited him to do that. Which gets me really, really excited because Star Trek The Next Generation was a big thing in my house, between my dad and I.
Yeah.
And, that is the, I mean, I used to watch the older Star Trek, but this was the thing that made me really fall in love with Star Trek. And admittedly, I lost touch with all of that. So seeing, Sir Patrick Stewart step back into the role of Picard and bring that, I mean, just, I, all types of feels for me. This is the thing that will motivate me to get CBS All Access.
Yeah.
I can't miss this.
No. And that tells you something right there, right? So, yeah. And that's a big statement that you just made there. And you know, hopefully get it soon because then you can catch up on the, you know, the episodes of The Next Generation. You can refresh your memory. But yeah, he did actually say, because I wound up watching the whole panel. For the show, and he mentions what brought him back to this, and it was basically when they originally he was just like no, and then finally they sat him down and were like, well, here, these are this kind of the concept that we have, and these are some of the stories that we're talking about, and this is where we'd like to see this character be at this point in his life, whenever. And the more they talked about where the direction that they wanted to go, he got more and more excited about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was essentially like the writer's room that got him pumped for the idea to do this. This was my favorite thing that came out of Comic-Con, just because obviously I'm a huge Star Trek fan. So that's the thing that got me the most pumped up.
Yeah, I mean,
also
like
the Marvel stuff.
The story for Picard, like, I don't know where it's going.
Well, that's the thing, right? The trailer is cool because it gives you like a mystery. Like you're trying to figure
it's
out
like,
well,
this girl's special. Yeah. What's the deal with her?
Yep.
And he says this line like, if she is who I think she is and she's in grave danger, it's like, dude, what?
Yeah.
Who is she?
Yes. That's what it should do, right?
Yeah. 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 I'm like, holy cow. Oh. And then like the appearances of people, you know, former castmates and stuff from other shows, like, dude, sign me up.
Yeah.
I'm in it.
And
in
what,
it
which
it.
Wasn't
Let's
in
go.
The trailer, they did mention that Jonathan Frakes
and
Marina Sirtis will be also, they're not going to be regulars, but they will be reprising their roles as well, for at least
so
in
good.
A couple of episodes.
So, so good.
Yes.
Oh, exciting.
And also tied somewhat to that is that, you know, the show that I've gushed about a lot, The Orville, which was renewed for a third season, they announced that it will, but that third season will now be on Hulu and not on Fox. The reason being that they are, and it's going to take much more time. Like, it's going to come out in late 2020 now, because they want to pump more money into the show. And the shows have gotten, the episodes have gotten so big now in the scope, especially at the end of, they did a battle at the end of season two that is up there with any science fiction TV battles ever, as far as like the effects and the scope of it. So they want to keep expanding on that. So I think that was interesting because it was renewed by Fox and then the decision was made to move it to Hulu, which will be mostly owned by Disney by that point.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. And it's funny because I basically watch it on Hulu, even though I do get Fox here in New York. I choose to watch it on Hulu. For some reason, I just prefer it on Hulu. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about fast-forwarding through commercials and stuff. So for me, it won't make a difference. But I did think that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, this is the streaming wars, I think, man. I think, you know, there's lots of good stuff happening. There's lots of great content.
Sure.
And
they're firing it up. I mean, NBC announced today that they're bringing AP Bio back, a show that they had just canceled for their streaming service that comes out next year as their first original, quote-unquote, original program. So they're going to have a new season of that for their streaming service to go along with the Office episodes and stuff. So, yeah, you're starting to see a lot of this, like, jockeying for, you know, and it's like the networks are almost an afterthought.
Well, I will say that it has definitely been an exciting San Diego Comic-Con. Some point on my bucket list, I got to get out there and actually participate in all of the fun and festivities and watching people cosplay. I mean, we do our thing here in New York, but San Diego Comic-Con is like everybody, every fanboy, fangirl's mecca. So this year seems to have upped the ante. There's been lots of good stuff that's been trickling out of
and
that.
No, Star Wars stuff except for some exciting toy stuff, but I guess they're saving all of that, right?
Oh man, yeah. So it sounds like maybe D23 in the next couple of weeks will be the time to hear and learn more about things like The Mandalorian and Cassian Andor and all of those things. Sure. It's funny because a lot of these stories, and we saw it with the MCU stuff, like the, you know, the Falcon and Winter Soldier and the Wanda and WandaVision thing, like those things were all rumored. There was nothing really announced, nothing hardcore until obviously this past weekend. So it's going to be really fun to kind of see all of the things that were, you know, have been rumored come to fruition. And if D23 is the place where Lucasfilm makes those announcements, amazing, super exciting. You know, there's also a whole lot of other things that we'll see kind of come to fruition for Disney Plus, like the Monsters Inc. thing and all of that content. So I'm telling you, man, it seems like Disney Plus is going to be ripe with stuff.
Disney Plus. First of all, I guess it makes sense since Marvel kind of stole the show at San Diego Comic-Con. It makes sense to kind of give Star Wars now the forum for D23. But I mean, Disney Plus at the end of the day is not only are they going to have a ton of really cool original content, but it seems like it's going to be vital stuff. Like, you know, if these Marvel shows are going to be, well, not if, they are going to be part of Phase 4 for the most part.
I mean, they are. They're part of Phase 4. Everything. Yeah. From a film and Disney Plus perspective, like 10 so projects.
Those are shows you're going to want to watch, right? If you're just into the whole universe. And now the Star Wars stuff, like The Mandalorian and all that stuff, I mean, that stuff is, I mean, if you're a Star Wars fan, you're not going to want to miss that. So, like, there's going to be you're going to be immersed in content with Disney Plus, you know, assuming that all of this stuff gets released, you know, one right after the other, that type of thing. I mean, that's going to be a heck of a streaming service. And then once you start getting some original DC content on HBO Max, plus their legacy content, I mean, those two streaming services alone, I mean, between the Marvel and Star Wars stuff that's going to be on, and the Fox stuff that's going to be on the Disney Plus service, and then all the DC stuff that's going to be on the HBO Max service, I mean, man. Those two streaming services alone, plus throw in all this cool Star Trek stuff on CBS All Access, like, I'm good. I'm good for a while. Like, I don't really probably need anything else except my wrestling streaming services and whatnot, but yeah.
It's crazy.
I may never turn on a regular TV channel ever again. I mean, I'm serious, to be honest with you.
I'm struggling. Yeah. So I can only imagine what's going to happen in 2020.
Sure.
The one thing I'll say about the MCU very quickly, and I totally forgot to mention this, is, and I did hint at it a bit, but the titles of these movies being very comic booky, it's telling me that the MCU is shifting. They're doing something very different. It seems like they're kind of leaning in a bit more onto the more fantastical elements of their stories and the comic books and all of that stuff, and they're going to be bringing a lot of that stuff to life in their films, and that's really exciting to see.
Although I do think their titles though have always been, I mean, if you think back though, obviously Thor the Dark World, Thor Captain America the Winter Soldier, Avengers Age of Ultron, Infinity War, I mean, these are, those were based on comic book storylines, right? Those titles. So it's not like something that they've never done before.
Dude.
But
Love and Thunder.
Love and Thunder. Well, yeah. I mean, that's,
that's wild.
Wild, the, right? In the Doctor Strange title is very like, yeah, they're definitely much more creative. They're not directly based on comic book stories, and they're much, seems like they're much more fun.
Yeah, and it's almost like you're getting a graphic novel, like a very separate story of your favorite character.
Yeah,
in a way, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
which is cool. Yeah.
So that's why I'm curious to see now what the next Black Panther movie is called and what the next Captain Marvel movie is called, because you're going to assume that they're not going to be called Black Panther 2 and Captain Marvel 2. Right. The only character that's ever gotten that is Iron Man.
Yeah. I mean, it also makes me wonder, is it just going to be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3?
I think so. It seems like it. Why would, right? I mean, that would make sense, because then you'd throw off everything if you had Volume 1 and Volume 2, and then all of a sudden it was called
Volume 3.
OCD would kick in, and that would drive me crazy.
Yeah. But, Adam Warlock.
Yeah.
So, all right, cool. Well, if there isn't anything else, let's wrap this bad boy up and get out of here.
I think that's about it. That was enough, right? A few things to talk about,
I mean,
this week.
Hell, we just did a whole hour and a half on San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So,
give us your thoughts, obviously, what you're excited about, what you're not excited about.
Who won the show? Who lost?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, we always want you to join that conversation. Unpack your love. You can find us on the social medias, on Twitter at the Fanboy Garage. Of course, on Facebook, we have the Fanboy Garage page there and the private groups that you can join. Some good conversation going on there. We're also at the Fanboy Garage on Instagram as well. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at RealCAlmighty.
And you can find me on Twitter as well at StartingSith. Please don't forget to stop by our merch store at thefanboygarage.com. Pick up your latest T-shirts, coasters, throw pillows, aprons, a Mother's Day gift, a Father's Day gift, who knows, something, anniversary, bar mitzvah. You can get it at thefanboygarage.com. Awesome. Well, guys, thanks for listening. It has been episode 55 for you, and we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for joining.